I don't know if you saw the preview for the show that our fearless leader Rich Tate had put up, mentioning that we're going to have an interview with Daniel Bryan as well as Kelly Kelly tonight on the program. So,
tremendous.
Remember to secure Rich for that one.
Kelly is going to smile a lot and hold her hands up. And
yes,
she does that really well.
Wes, I'm sure you would agree there is a great family resemblance between she and I, isn't there?
I didn't want to bring that out, but I know there were times when you and I worked close by. It was hard for me to keep my hands off of you. I
have that way, but you were very gentle. The good thing about that is, with everything that's going around these days, is I do get a lot of offers for dates. But unfortunately, the guys that ask me out, they don't think I'm very bright. So, but anyway.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Welcome again, everyone, to Ringside Wrap. It is Wednesday, March 28th, 2012, 8 p.m. on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined, as always, by Les Thatcher. And Les, how are you this evening?
I'm not bad, Mike. I've got to ask one question.
Yes, sir.
I tried to translate an email that was sent between us, and we were going to briefly talk about the firing of Lala. Who is Lala? Your spell check didn't work very well.
That wasn't me. That was actually Rich sending that one over, and that is for Muhammad Lawal. I guess now former Zuffa employee, fought for Strikeforce, and he has been shown the door by the company due to apparently, hinting that a Nevada State Athletic Commission panelist or commissioner was racist, apparently, when he asked them at the beginning of a meeting about steroids or PEDs that he was on and tested positive for. I guess he was asked, do you understand what's going on? One of those things, do you understand English and can you say your own name sort of thing? Which they asked all of the fighters. Apparently, he took that wrong, which, of course, made Dana White take him wrong, and you just don't want to show up a commissioner if you're a growing sport. So, yes, Muhammad King Mo Lawal showing the door, although he was friends with, I believe it was Shad Gaspard. And King Mo's whole dream has always been to get into professional wrestling. Now, he fights at the 205-pound weight class. So I'm sure Tali walks around at least at 225, if not bigger. But apparently he really wanted to get into wrestling. Chad Gaspar told him, no, look, at your age, this is always going to be here for you if you want to take the chance. But while you're young, do MMA. And so he ended up taking the MMA route and becoming relatively successful. They're a big fish in a small pond when it came to Strikeforce. So who knows what the possibilities could be after talking with Dave Meltzer and about that a couple weeks ago, about the possibility of guys' careers ending in MMA, and do they take the jump over to pro wrestling? It's a real possibility with Mr. Lawal.
All right. Well, I didn't know Mr. Lawal, I guess, because Strikeforce is on Showtime, right?
Yes, sir.
Or where is Strikeforce?
That's
it is? Okay. Because I gave up Showtime a while back. Anyway, so I'm not an expert on MMA like Todd Martin's not an expert on wrestling. But anyway, that's...
Oh, before we go any further, folks, I do want to mention that coming up here at the bottom of the hour, the creative brain behind Dragon Gate USA, formerly of Ring of Honor, as a lot of people listening out here will remember him from as well, Gabe Sapolsky is going to join us. We're also going to have an interview with Eddie Edwards that Jonathan Williams had done earlier on this week, and we're going to play that as well. But, Todd Martin and I, we sometimes can get to the same end of the path, but we take bizarrely different ways to get there, and sometimes I just cannot understand his reasoning with things. And this debate with Brian when it comes to WWE, which is something we should probably talk about leading into WrestleMania, because I don't know what you thought of Raw on Monday, but I thought it was pretty poor. Todd Martin, and I don't want to talk for him here or take him out of context, but essentially he looks at Cena as one of the top five problems as far as him being crammed down everybody's throat, that he is one of the reasons that there is a malaise for fans out there, wrestling fans, and for the mainstream to get into him. Basically, Brian's argument against this is, WWE is at fault for this, because no matter who you put there, it wouldn't matter, and I agree with Brian on this because of the fact that you brought back The Rock, The Undertaker, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Mick Foley. You still get a 3-1 rating. They have done some serious damage to themselves, and if the Survivor Series buy rate wasn't an indication of that, what is going on now should be a great indication of that. I'm sorry to go off on a rant here, Les, but we talked with Dave Meltzer, and something I brought up.
That's
a lot
all right. I've got nothing but time.
I've had this fear that because of what got me into
I asked
pro
a question about who Lala was, and I
oh, yeah.
you're doing a Rock 15-minute soliloquy to prelude to something. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I just want
I,
to see
that's all right.
The whole thing. I know
Todd's a Flippy Flopper fan. He has orgasms over Flippy Floppers, so which has nothing to do with actual psychology and wrestling. So anyway, enough about Todd. Todd's
no,
in
but,
his own sphere anyway. Raw on Monday was a show. One of the things that I think is telling, and yeah, they've dug a hell of a hole. Of their own making. I mean, it's not like someone has sabotaged the company. There is no other company to sabotage the company. But a young man at the gym today who's in his 30s was stopped to talk to me and was asking if I was going to watch WrestleMania. And he said he was mentioning Raw on Monday night. And he said, well, that silly Team Teddy, Team Johnny thing, he said, they use the same old formula. They put the guys from that out there in a tag match, and he said, so why would I want to see him on the pay-per-view? And I thought, boy, is this telling or what? Here's a guy who doesn't go to net websites, who doesn't claim to be an expert, like so many people on the Internet do, about something they know absolutely nothing about, but he realizes that they have found this formula, and he's onto it. So what value is the formula? I mean, if he knows, and he's right. Well, first of all, that particular tag match I wouldn't pay 50 cents to watch anyway, never mind $50. But, it was a show. I did see someone had listed the ratings of go-home shows going back to 80-something, I think, or I forget, how far back it went. But anyway, this was the lowest rated go home show for WrestleMania, or not the lowest, but like in the lowest three.
Yep.
So it's going to do some business because it's WrestleMania, but I was surprised that there wasn't more Taker and Helmsley on it, but was the last, the whole Rock and Cena filibuster, which is all I can call it, is filibuster, was entertaining. Cena got a little mean at the end, but Rock made a telling statement too. This may be your house, but I helped build the road to it. Thank you. I'm also part of that construction crew. But, you know, I listened to Dave and Brian the other day about it. I agree with Dave. Would Rashid and Rampage get out there and stand and feed each other lines and just look at each other for 20 minutes without having 10,000 guys to have to pull them apart? I mean, the point is, I think they've talked these two guys to death, and it's not really – it's entertaining, but it's – the bottom line is, why are they having this match? We know why Taker and Helmsley are having a match. We know why Punk and Jericho are having a match. Why are these guys having this match? It's a pissing contest. I mean, is that the strongest thing you can get out of it? I like the special. It made them both show as celebrities. And I was actually entertained. The depth of it, I thought, why don't you people do this to get some of your new people over before you beat the hell out of them, you know? But it was, you know, that's one thing. I can never knock WWE about their specials. They do a tremendous job with them, you know. And it, like I say, it was entertaining. I enjoyed seeing the thing of Rock as a young man, and the same with John. But overall, I know somebody asked me today, if I were booking this thing, what would be the last match? It would be Taker and Helmsley. Is that to a certain degree sentimental? Yes. But they're going to – I mean, psychologically, the psychology of that match, there's going to be psychology there. There's going to be a hell of a match there. It should be, unless, you know, physically somebody can't go or something, which is yet to be determined. But then Rock and Cena can go next to last, and then – Jericho and Punk, and then Randy and Kane, and after that, I don't even care. They can put the 12-man on in a dark match, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Well, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, really,
yeah.
Except to
and
them.
Well, that's my
right?
thing. Yeah, exactly. And that's no. And they think that they actually are doing something that means something to somebody, and that's. What I was saying earlier, I was getting to the point of, you know, they've already turned into the damn bullet cars in a lot of ways where people, WrestleMania will do a million buys. But what's leading into it isn't anything. What's going to lead out of it isn't anything. And they're not, it's just, again, it got another 3-1. It was pathetic. And they're not cultivating wrestling fans, and they're not cultivating anything for their future. And it's like, you know, yeah, everybody's going to pay for WrestleMania every year. You know, you might make that bigger and bigger, but... Remember when Brock Lesnar and Rock were going to face off in Hell in a Cell, and they went back and they showed training footage and that sort of thing? As much as I love how slick and great that special was, but the flip side of it was like, again, why are you having this match again? I know it's two biggest stars of the biggest era, but you still have not made it. It's been cute. It's been funny. It's been entertaining in the lead-up. Cena has actually looked a little bit better than I thought he would, or come across better, but... There's still no reason that if it wasn't WrestleMania and you said you're going to spend $60 to pay for this, they didn't sell me, and it boggles my mind when they had a year where I thought that they would be able to, you know, clean it up and pick up the pieces and at least focus on something. They haven't done it, and that the rating blew my mind with that too.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've got to give you a little food for thought here, Mike. Here's something for you to chew on as well. When, you know, I, not just this past Monday night, but the last couple Monday nights, this has crossed my mind. You know, and I'm going to mention it now. We talk about the two biggest stars, and this is the match, the biggest match ever. And, well, you know, that's Nick Gulas used to do interviews for Nashville Television years ago. And every week Nick say, the biggest card in Nashville history. But somebody at one time, Len Rossi said, not on the air, but he said, Nick, wasn't last week the biggest match in Nashville history? I mean, every week was the biggest match in Nashville history, right? But you know what? We talk about Rock, and Rock's timing is his timing and delivery is something you can't teach. Either you got it or you don't have it, you know? And they were saying that in the special, too, right, about him as a kid. But
yeah.
The point is, okay, Cena, Rock, Austin, Bret Hart, grab a name here and throw it out. But over the last 20-plus years, Mark Callis has been consistently a top guy for this company. And nobody ever stops to talk about that or think of, I mean, I'm sure somebody must think about it, but I mean, this guy is not only, forget the fact that he's a locker room leader, he's not a locker room leader, but when was the last time he was in a preliminary match? But he's also smart enough to know how to evolve his gimmick. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, when the first time I ever saw the Undertaker gimmick, I said the same thing Jimmy Cornette did. I wish I could hide my head. I don't want anybody to know I'm in the wrestling business. It's so hokey and stupid. I'm embarrassed by it. But
hey,
now,
I said it
you put that gimmick on somebody. Huh? Yeah.
No, said,
you put that gimmick on somebody
fan,
else.
I mean, honestly. Oops, sorry, Les.
You felt the same way.
Yes.
Right?
I actually, believe it or not, yeah, because I remember
Hello?
Being a you still there? Uh-oh.
Yeah,
I'm
here.
Line problems? Oh, okay, good. We're having line problems again.
Rich, you're asleep at the wheel there. Rich is busy. I don't know what he's doing over there.
I hate to tell you, but you're both...
not paying attention. Then.
You're both, once again, live and hot and going live over the air. Everybody can hear you.
Yes. We just don't want to pay you any mind.
I can hear... Yeah, really. Go back to sleep, Rich. It's okay. We got it.
Okay.
You know, we love Rich. We really do. But you know, as you know, but I mean, you could have put that gimmick on 20 other people, and it would have never survived a year. Mark made it work, and then to evolve it and change it, like to the motorcycle thing, right? And to what it is currently is, I mean, even with all the silly pyrotechnics and the music, you know, the gong and the whole thing, people still buy this guy, you know, and over the long haul, you know, Cena said, well, I've been here longer than you, Rock. Stop, John, stop right there, because Mark Callis has been here longer than both of you rolled together.
Yeah.
Right?
Longer than,
if you go all the way back to WWF, he's been here longer than Bruno. He's been there longer than anybody, and that needs some sort of accolades. I mean, you know, standing ovation or something, for God's sakes, right?
How, you know, you made me think about, how do you exactly, do you honor The Undertaker the way he should be honored, that you would want to honor him? But, you know, I just can't see him doing the Hall of Fame thing. I guess I can, but... He's just so synonymous with that incredibly great character. Yeah, you're never going to be able to truly give him the send-off that he actually deserves. Not only because of the gimmick,
well,
I don't know how you're
that...
really going to be able to do it.
Well, I would hope once he's retired that... Well, the thing of it is, he has kept himself... Mark Callis has never been a public figure, but has always been The Undertaker. He doesn't do television interviews. He doesn't do talk show interviews. He doesn't do anything like that. So the mystique has always been there, but I would hope to think that once he is legitimately retired, that Mark Callis comes back and receives, you know, the Hall of Fame thing and the accolade. Because like I say, when you sit and think about it, we can sing the song for all these other guys, but this is the guy who's been there longer than anybody and has maintained a high level, a high profile. Has he ever worked a preliminary match ever? You know, I mean, his record is phenomenal, and I know people are saying, well, you know, of course that they want us to think that Michaels is going to in some way help Helmsley, you know, break the streak. But I wouldn't say this. I don't think about anybody else that I can think of at this point in time. I'd say if you're leaving a territory, you know, if Steamboat's leaving a territory as great as Ricky was and as much I respect him, do it, you know, get somebody over on your way out or Flair or Harley or anybody else. But in the situation here with this guy, he needs to go out with on top with the streak intact, and if he doesn't, I will be extremely disappointed. I honestly will.
Same here. And being a, you know, I was such a wrestling junkie, as one could probably imagine when I was a kid. that, you know, when the thought of Kane the Undertaker, and then Percy Pringle put on a bunch of powder, and he was pallbearer, and it was like, oh, God. And then, you know, then looking all these years, you know, and I've always been amazed on how that character, from burning Vince's teddy bear to then, you know, having the issues with DDP over his wife, and all, and it just, he has always just kept himself, you know, Brian and I were talking this week, and I couldn't even remember on Sunday. It's bizarre to think that he was facing, and no offense to Prince A-Train and Big Show in a WrestleMania match at WrestleMania 19, but when you look at it, it's kind of funny to even look back, or the thoughts of him against Kamala when he wrestled him. It's just, he's on some other planet. He really is on another level as far as how great he's going to be, and how much influence he's had over pop culture and things like that too, with relief pitchers coming to the mound because with, you know, with the Undertaker theme music and things like that. It's just, it really is an epic career. And, you know, again, is 20-0 enough, or as long as his body can come back next year, would you just keep doing it, or is you know, 20 a round enough number?
No, I think as a performer, physically he has evolved to the point he's not physically capable of getting any better. Mentally, I think Mark is smart enough. I mean, all of us that it's ever been anything in this business at all to any degree, your mind has to continue to grow, learn, evolve, and, you know, and improve. But physically, we all, you know, everybody hits that flat line where you don't go any better. And I would you know, I like, and you're a big sports fan. I remember Willie Mays as a rookie with the New York Giants, right? And I remember, yeah, Willie Mays' last year with the Mets, and I wish I didn't. And I don't want to see that with Mark. I didn't like seeing it with my friend Ric Flair, or, you know, or guy, some of the older guys. I don't want to see them that way. And maybe that's just me because, you know, because of my background in the business. But I think it's, you know, no, I don't know if he's, well, of course we'll know more after the match Sunday what his physical limitations or capabilities are, but he can't improve any more physically, Mike, so I don't see that it's of any value to continue. And where does he go? I don't see Cena, you know, him and Cena, I don't think it means anything, and I don't think it ever, I mean, I think the guys, because of where he's been with the company and so long, it's got to be Michaels and Helmsley, and I don't see past that who it could possibly be that would be of value to put him with. Do you? I mean, and the other, you know, the one thing, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier or not, because we're both off on a rant tonight, but the thing with Mark is he knew when to pull back. He knew when to take time off. And there are a few other people, I won't mention any names, John, but who need to know that too. I mean, maybe it's not, you know, but the writers need to know that maybe Cena needs a break. Maybe some of these other guys need a break. That's the other thing I'll say about Chris Jericho. Going away and coming back has, you know, made him much more valuable than just driving him down everybody's throat. But, yeah, I think Callis is the man. I mean, I won't say he's the greatest worker, you know, and I'm not the most fond of that gimmick, but in terms of longevity, and smart in terms of, you know, what to do, when to do it, and when not to do it, you know, it's hard to say there's somebody better than this guy.
And if I'm him or WWE, you draw the line almost at Triple H, because you go, you know, when people look back at the record books and all of that, and obviously people don't look back at record books anymore, but everybody knows what I mean. You don't, if you're going to beat The Undertaker, it's not like you're going to do it with somebody you're going to fire or anything like that, because to me, that, I'm not saying that's an insult to the legacy, but in a way, it is. I wouldn't want to look back and, you know, Santino Marella is the one who beats The Undertaker and breaks the streak. It's got to be somebody.
Oh, God.
You know, if that,
no,
you know,
no,
if, no. If that ends, you know, something like, it's just, you need to have somebody to end it like that. And I hope he can go on once a year for at least a couple years. And if they can't, and I don't know, obviously his body's going to tell us everything, but the thought of him, because they're doing New York next year for 28, but the possibility of them going to Dallas to Jerry Jones's massive, you know, cavern in Dallas for 29, or it's possible. And I can imagine The Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve Austin, if they are going to do one last one, damn, that would be a great way to actually end it. So for my own selfish reasons, I hope both of their bodies can hold out because, again, people talk about Steve Austin coming back, and I know CM Punk would love to face him and all that stuff, but considering he's a guy where the one bad bump could, you know, paralyze him or re-break his neck, you know, obviously he wants to work with somebody safe, and The Undertaker and Steve Austin, to me, could stand there like Johnny Valentine for 20 minutes and just stare at the crowd and have them in the palm of their hand where you would get the most mileage body-wise out of those guys by not having them do anything at all because they don't need to. And I know Richard
I'd want to – because Steve – well, see, that's the thing. Taker's got to have somebody a little younger, a little more physically capable – of bumping and you know, moving, somebody to move around him to a certain degree so that he can limit himself and stay within his boundaries. And he and Steve wouldn't, I mean, I don't know what kind of physical shape Steve's in now with the movies, it's got to be pretty good, but he's been away from the ring how long now? So in terms of ring timing, I mean, it's not like, you know, he can't go on the road for 2 weeks and get sharp timing-wise, you know, and get ring wins. So I don't know. I, you know, that match a number of years ago, fine, but I don't think now it's it would be something I'd want to see. Or if, you know, if I were the guy putting the pieces together for a big show, I don't think I'd want to book it. I mean, and I don't mean that in disrespect to either guy, because I like both people as human beings, and in terms of what they've done in the business, they're phenomenal. But I just don't think at this stage in both their lives, it's not a good match. That's, I guess, the point I'm trying to make.
No, understood. And I know Rich is going to get mad at me if we don't go to vote or get angry with me. I would correct Avery for this. So get angry with me if I don't throw it to break here, because after this break from Dragon Gate USA and the Vault, Gabe Sapolsky, we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard for Rad. Planning on going out and having a party? Great. Have a lot of fun. But do me a big favor and don't blow it. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives. You should too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
This is President Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge. When we see people serving their country and one another, volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines, and the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
A message from Renew America Together, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Want to know which teacher your kids are most likely to choose as a role model this year in school? Hey, I'm Layla Hathaway. It's the person who teaches them about music, not sports or English or history. Music. Surprised? You shouldn't be. Music teachers have always played an important role in the lives of their students. They help our kids tap into their natural creativity. They teach them about cooperation and self-discipline. It's a bonus that when kids have learned about scales and clefs, they find math and English concepts easier to grasp. That's because of how music education expands a young person's spatial IQ. Reading poetry or solving an equation is easier if kids know their sharps and flats. It's a fact. Help your kids get to know their music teacher at their school. Get them involved in music this year.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Musical Instruments, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone.
I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with, you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and obviously we were talking about WrestleMania a little bit earlier on, but one of the things about WrestleMania weekend is it has turned into a time where lots of different groups and events take place, autograph signings, different federations running, but one, really, the original guy to do it is Gabe Sapolsky, and this coming up this weekend, he's basically making you order an iPay-per-view because he's giving it away for only $1.99 on Saturday, and you can order it through the ringsiderap.com website. But, Gabe, how are you this evening, and how amped up are you for this weekend?
I'm really, really pumped. Thanks very much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to speak with Les Thatcher as well, and we're super excited. I got a 6 a.m. plane. I'm not going to sleep, and we got a big show in Hollywood, Florida tomorrow night, and, of course, a live iPay-per-view just mentioned for $1.99 at WWNLive.com on Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, and then we wrap it all up Saturday night with another live iPay-per-view. And again, that's at WWNLive.com, and that's with the big six-man tag team match. So it's a huge, huge weekend, and it's really just, like you said, it's just an awesome weekend now. We're going to be on Miami Beach at a beach resort for our two Dragon Gate USA shows in Miami. It's part of the Wrestle Reunion Convention, where I'm sure a lot of Les's old friends will be at, and just so many legends and Hall of Famers there. And then on top of it, you add in all the great stars that we have with Dragon Gate USA, and you know, what more could you ask for as a wrestling fan?
And this whole thing is actually going to begin on March 29th.
Before we talk
Hollywood.
More about Dragon Gate and Evolve, I want to talk about Gabe Sapolsky's father. How's that baby?
Really, really good. Keeping my hands full right now. Like today, I'll tell you a little story. Today, he's almost 2.5, so he's getting into everything now. And today was, you know, the normal day before a show, and I was watching him this afternoon. My wife is at work. And, you know, I turned my head for a few minutes to pump out some emails and everything. I turn around, and he's got magic marker all over his face. So he's quite a handful these days.
Have you started teaching him how to book yet, Gabe?
No, I'm keeping him far away from all that. So I don't watch any wrestling when he's around, to be honest with you. So I did try to hit him with the clothesline today, though. He's really small, so he'll be able to duck pretty easily.
Awesome. Okay, that's actually an interesting thing.
How are you?
Sorry, Les, go ahead.
I was going to say, how is it for you juggling these two promotions at the same time? Is that getting a little stressful for you?
No, I mean, after the ROH schedule I had when we were doing two double shots a month, and I was also doing FIP on top of that, it's a piece of cake. It's not a biggie, you know. It's more balancing, you know, being a dad and watching the baby and, you know, doing all the stuff that I used to do with these promotions, you know. It's weird. Like, I think about it sometimes, you know. The ROH days, I was a little mentally ill there for a while because I just spend all my time thinking about, you know, how people could hurt each other and how people could do things to make them hate each other, you know. And, like, you know, now I'm in the middle of booking and everything, and there's a diaper change in the middle of it, you know. So that kind of brings you right back down to earth and back to reality right there, you know. So, like, I was, you know, I almost tweeted it out today, you know. I was in the middle of doing all this work. It's super hectic, you know, the day before the show. And, you know, I still have time for a diaper change in the middle of all that.
Well, you know, coming up this weekend and going down to Florida, you know, you kind of said at the beginning, you know, 2006 when it was, you know, Do Fixer and Blood Generation, and they came over, and, you know, I don't know if you were to be given all the credit for this or not, or to who gets the credit as far as, obviously you had used them one time before, I think it was in Buffalo, but what made you kind of, you know, really make WrestleMania weekend a chance to really showcase Ring of Honor and now Dragon Gate USA, and what is it like, you know, because a lot of people didn't get a chance to follow Toriumon or have, you know, this was their first chance in 2006 to see Dragon Gate and obviously made a big impression on lots and lots of people where they're coming back again. I mean, do you have any chance to reflect on, you know, the last 6 years of doing this stuff and how it came to be in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, number one, I do deserve all the credit for it. No doubt about that. As Les will tell you, you know, even if somebody else comes up with the idea as a booker, once you approve it, it becomes your idea and you get the credit for it. So, yeah, you know, I'll take 100% of the
right,
for that
exactly.
One. But, basically, you know, they obviously had a great reputation and you know, we knew that they were awesome wrestlers, and they actually volunteered to come in and on that show in 2006. And WrestleMania weekend, they know what a big deal it is. They know that, you know, all eyes are the wrestling world or wherever WrestleMania is that year. And Dragon Gate is a very progressive, aggressive company. They want to be a worldwide company. They don't want to just be, you know, a regional Japan promotion. So they saw the opportunity there. And, you know, the booking, it doesn't take, you know, half a brain to say, okay, you know, we'll let these guys name their match. And they name the six man. And, then they just came in and blew everybody away. And, you know, fortunately I was with ROH 2 more years after that, so we were able to do 3 years of that six-man, and it was sensational every year. And then, you know, I was fired, and Terry had to fall out with Dragon Gate over something stupid. And then we took a year off, and then we've been back right at it, you know. And last year we did something different with it by having Ronan, the All-American team that we have, of Johnny Gargano, Chuck Taylor, and Rich Swann, against the Dragon Gate team with Shima, and then we also had Ricochet in that match too. And this year we're doing something even different one more time, is now we have Loki in the mix. And Loki, of course, he was on NXT, the NXT winner in WWE as Cabal. And, you know, he had to hold back a lot doing that, and now we have him completely unleashed. He's in peak form. He's an elite athlete. And on top of it, he has all these fresh matches against everyone in Dragon Gate. So on Saturday night in Miami, we have Loki teaming up with Akira Tozawa and BB Hulk, who are two of the most outstanding wrestlers in the world today, and they're against Shima, the Dragon Gate icon, Mochizuki, the revered veteran of Dragon Gate, and he's the last guy in the locker room I'd want to get in a real fight with. He's just a complete badass. And they have Ricochet on their team, who's one of today's new stars. And note that I said today's new stars, not an upcoming star, because Ricochet has arrived. So right in that match, you have three fresh opponents for Loki, all very diverse styles. So it's going to be very challenging and very interesting, and it brings a whole new slant on that whole six-man thing. So again, DGUSA.TV, all the ticket and hotel info and everything. Again, we're on Miami Beach as part of the Wrestle Reunion Convention, and it'll be on live iPay-per-view, www.live.com, 8 p.m. Eastern this Saturday.
And you bring up Ricochet, and, you know, Sammy Callahan is really, you know, especially in Evolve too, really, you know, people are recognizing his talent a lot more now. And, you know, obviously WWE likes to sniff around. They like to look at guys. And obviously those two names that I've heard, especially when it comes to Sami Callihan, you know, you've got to be used to this by this point with everything that you've had to go through. But, you know, how do you feel about at any time, you know, a guy could, you know, just be on his way like that? Does it, you know, does that throw you off mentally as far as, you know, or is that just, it's such an accepted part of the business that you're just, you just move on?
No, I thrive with that. I love it because my favorite thing in the book is watching a new guy make the most of an opportunity and become a star. That's the most fun for me. And honestly, like, there's times when, you know, maybe a guy has become a made star and we've had him on top for a while, and it's just, it's not fun for me to book him anymore. And it might sound weird because it's like, you know, that's where you want a guy to be as a star, but, like, you know, then you kind of go on cruise control. You know, the guy's gone as far as he's going to do with you, and you hope you have a good run with him, and that's time to move on. If you have the same guys all the time, it creates a very stale roster, especially on our level, you know. So I welcome that. You know, I'm thrilled to see the guys moving on and making money. And at the same time, you know, there's guys I'd love to have a longer run with. You know, John Moxley, I would have loved to have him for another 6 to 12 months. You know, we had a whole huge babyface run for him planned, and it would have been great to pull that off. But at the same time, when we lost him, we did have a great year and a half run with him in both Dragon Gate USA and Evolve, which is a nice run. And him leaving created the door for Sami Callihan to come in and really rise up the card. You know, if John Moxley didn't leave, we wouldn't have had that opportunity to push Sami Callihan to the next level, and that led the way to the Fit Finlay-Sami Callihan match at Evolve 9 last year, which the fans voted as our match of the year. So that never would have happened if John Moxley had stuck around. So, you know, it's all about what you make out of it, and we have a tremendous roster of talent from top to bottom. We just signed a mystery luchador who we're debuting this weekend tomorrow in Hollywood, Florida, as a matter of fact. And, you know, he's a guy we got high hopes for. And there's Rick Swann just, you know, ready for his opportunity to move up the card. And AR Fox and Uon Nation. And there's just a ton of great talent. And if you have the same guys on top, you know, year after year after year, you're like, I say it's like football, you know. You can have 3 all-pro quarterbacks, but you can only play one. You know, and that's the way wrestling is. There's only one main event. There's only one semi-main event. And if those spots are taken, nobody else can become elevated. And when you have those guys that want to be elevated, that are passionate, hungry, and driven to be elevated, you get special performances out of them.
There always seems to be a lot of competition on, you know, both the Evolve and the Dragon Gate shows, too. Not a who can top who sort of thing, but really, you know, just presenting what they present in their best possible way, and then they just put it over the top with the microphones. I mean, didn't even bring up guys like, you know, Gargano and Chuck Taylor. I mean, Johnny Gargano is, what, 13 years old? I don't know how old he is, but he presents himself in such a way that you would never guess his age, and he talks in a way that you would never believe it either. And I know he was banged up there for a little while, but... you know, what are your thoughts on Gargano? Because, again, he's so young, and he's already seemingly, you know, very comfortable with what he is.
Johnny Gargano is a really special talent to me, and one of my favorites from, you know, I've been booking for 10 years now. It's 2002 that the first ROH show was, and Gargano is one of the most special guys to me over the course of that 10 years, simply because he started with us on the very first Dragon Gate USA show in the bonus card. You know, it wasn't even on the main show. He was in the very first match on the bonus card on the very first Dragon Gate USA show, and he climbed all the way over a course of about 2.5 years to become the Dragon Gate USA champion last November. And it was just such an incredible journey and such a fun thing to watch. And watch him, you know, what I like to do is, you know, okay, he started in the bonus card. He did well on that. So he put him on the main show in an undercard match. He did good on that, so he got a little bit of a bigger opportunity. He did well with that, so we kept giving him, you know, bigger and bigger opportunities. He kept grabbing the ball on each one until finally he reached all the way to the top, and he had a super emotional match against Yamada where he won the title, where the fans were going crazy for him last November. And just to see him rise to the occasion and grow into that role is just so much fun to watch and such an amazing thing. And it's something that I'm really... I don't want to say I'm proud because that sounds like I'm taking credit for it, but it's just something that's just amazing to be a small part of, and that's all a testament to Johnny's work and his work ethic and his drive.
Now, I don't want to suck all the air out of the
You know, I've never got a chance to watch.
Oh, go ahead, Les.
I've heard so much about him, but I've never had a chance to see him. Gabe, compare him to somebody that I've seen for me. Give me a four example.
A lot of people compare him to Alex Shelley. I think some of his movements are like Alex Shelley, but personality-wise, he's very different. He's a guy who he's almost like the fan out of the crowd who has that charisma, but he's got that extra charisma. But he's like a guy who was a fan who's made something out of himself through hard work and through his charisma and through his natural connection that he has with the crowd. And you know, he's not a guy that you're going to see for the first time and is going to completely dazzle you by doing a crazy flip or dive like a Ricochet or Pac on our roster. But he's an extremely solid guy who just is constant and is always growing and is always developing, and he's just got that it factor. You know, Les, you know, some people have that it factor and some don't, and he just has that natural connection
right
with fans, and it's very genuine and very real, and that's why people who are along for that journey for the 2.5 years who I climbed up the card, it was something special when he won that title from Yamato last November, you know, and that's why, because people had watched him and grew with him, you know, and he doesn't carry himself like he's above the fans. He carries himself like he is one of the fans who happens to be an exceptional talent.
Gabe, I know
you know, there's something that I've always...
Please,
go ahead.
Michael? Can I have 2 minutes here, please?
Yes, sir.
Mike gets cranked up, Gabe, and it's hard to shut him down.
I want to talk to you, Les.
What I was going to say is...
It's been too long.
This with this kid, the way you're talking about him, to me, I think more talent should be brought along. I think fans enjoy watching, whether it's a baseball player or wrestler or whatever, a performer, an athlete evolve from the beginning and grow, and I think they tie, you know, they get a closer tie or a better connection, and I think that's what's lacking with, you know, with some of the companies too, is they're not given that opportunity. I think at WWE I see that too often, that you know, they think the idea to bring a young guy in and just beat the hell out of him, which, I mean, rookies lose, rookies learn, but I think given the opportunity to watch them evolve, there's a closer connection, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that's what it's all about too. It's you know, and you see it in real sports. You know, somebody might say, oh, you know, I saw that guy play as a freshman in college, and I knew he was going to be an NBA All-Star one day. And then they have a connection to that athlete, and you know, that's one of the great things. And I think that's why you see a lot of that talent come up from the WWE developmental system, and they don't get over it, because they bring a guy up and they give him this huge push right out the gate, you know, and like a Jack Swagger comes to mind right now, and then it doesn't work. You know, the guy's not ready for that role yet. He hasn't learned how to grow into it. It fails, and they beat him a million times, and then they go back to square one. You know, CM Punk, let's just ignore CM Punk's history
right on
the independents. He's a guy that came up, and the fans were basically, you know, he came up to ECW, and the fans watched him climb from ECW to world champion, you know, and it didn't happen overnight. It took a while, and you know, most of that was Punk having to fight his way through all the backstage obstacles and everything, but that all worked for his benefit, because in the end, he did grow that connection with the WWE fans, because he did start at the bottom and work his way up. And, you know, that's why Bryan Danielson has so many of those fans. And that's why I'm really proud and happy of the roster we have right now in Dragon Gate USA and Evolve. I mean, these are the next stars. And they're today, a lot of them have arrived. They're today's new stars. And you can jump on the bandwagon right now and watch these guys on this level. And the thing is, it's like, the other big advantage you have with independent pro wrestling that you don't have in, like, let's say MMA, if you go to your local MMA show, you know you're seeing a lot of fighters that probably aren't good enough to ever go anywhere. You know, that's why they're there. But with pro wrestling, you're able to offer something different than everybody else. You know, it's like music, you know. Justin Bieber might sell the most albums, but he definitely is not the best musician. And the band that has, like the Melvins, who have had a strong underground following for 30 years, are much superior musicians, and they play a different type of music. In wrestling, you can offer a different type of wrestling, and you can offer the best at that type of wrestling. So what I'm very proud of is that we do have today's new stars, and we are able to unleash them in Durango USA Evolve. We're able to let them create. We're able to let them do their own thing. We have them put together a body of work that they can be proud of and grow into superstars and grow into main event status. You know, Ricochet is a great example of that, of a guy who started out as on the undercard for us, toured extensively in Japan over the last year and grew into that role. And now he's going to be ready when it's time for him to grow into the next role, you know? So, like, that's one of the great things about watching independent wrestling. You get to see guys who are at the best at what they do with full creative freedom, and you get to watch them grow and become superstars. And that's what we have right now going on in Dragon Gate USA Evolve, and that's what we're going to feature on the live eye pay-per-view this Friday for $1.99. And, you know, for $1.99, you've got to try it and then see what these guys are all about.
Gabe, I know you got to run and do some
I'd like to take
a couple more from Les. Go ahead, Les.
Awesome.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I'd be interested because I remember working with Sammy Callahan when he was just a chubby little, you know, young guy just getting started. And I've just, you know, I've had a chance to see him in CZW a couple times, and just the way he's transformed his physique and the way he's matured as a performer, I think, is, you know, I enjoy watching that myself because, you know, he was just a kid who was interested in doing goofy bumps and stuff when he first started and wondered about what saying he should put across the back of his trunks. And he's turned into a mature worker who actually can go out there and control a crowd. And I think I'm like you. I think, you know, the developing is more fun than once they hang around. Well, so, you know, you and I go back to Nigel when you were looking for talent, and I'm thinking this guy will fit in, and then you took him and took him to the next level and became one of the best damn workers of the last decade, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, and, I mean, Nigel's a great example. That Sammy is a fantastic example because I did not like Sammy when I first saw him. You know, he tried to get in with us, you know, several times, and I just looked at him, and I didn't see anything. And then I was like, okay, you know, like, he was a local guy, and we had an extra spot, so I threw him in there, and he did well. And then, you know, I started noticing, okay, you know, he's getting a lot of shape, and I get a lot of respect for that, because as a fat guy myself, I know how hard it is to lose weight and to keep a diet and be as disciplined as Sammy was to get in the kind of shape he was. So he started gaining my attention that way, and then he became one of those guys where it's like, okay, let's give him a little bit more of an opportunity. He had a home run. All right, let's give him another opportunity. He had another home run. And now finally, you know, it got to the point when it came time for us to shut down the ECW Arena. We were able to lucked into having the final show ever at the ECW Arena last January. You know, we had Sammy close the building down. You know, and now Sammy's a top guy for us. And, you know, we built all the way to this huge grudge match he's having with Sabu this Saturday night in Miami, which has been a huge deal, and Sammy's done an awesome job with it. And Sammy's got a great wrestling match against BB Hulk this Friday on the $1.99 live eye pay-per-view over at WWN Live 2. So, you know, that Sammy is a great example of a guy who I didn't even like myself and who completely won me over. And now Sammy has taken me on this ride, from him, you know, being a guy I didn't even want to book to being a guy that I want to build the whole promotion around. And it's just great. It's so much fun to be a part of something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I'm like you. I didn't care for him when I first saw him either. And he grew on me. But that's, you know, that obviously to his credit too. Well, listen, I won't say any more, Mike. Gabe, it's always a pleasure, my friend. And the best of luck to you. And get better at changing those diapers, if you will.
I'm pretty good at it, so I don't think I got a lot of room for improvement there. So I got a pretty good ratio of soaked through pants to not soaked through pants. So all good. But thank you very much for having me on, and for everyone out there again, DGUSA.tv, all the info this weekend shows, and Evolve is coming to Toronto on April 13th. I haven't talked about that enough. Loki versus El Generico, Fit Finlay versus Sammy Callahan rematch. DGUSA.tv for all the info on that. Thanks a lot, guys.
Awesome, Gabe. Thank you so much. And, again, I hope you come
Thank
back
you.
On the before that Evolve 11 show, because I really want to talk to you about Fit Finlay. And Callahan is going to be great. So, everybody, when we come back, good talk to Eddie Edwards. We'll see you after that.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi here with you. I want to thank Gabe Sapolsky very much for coming on, and hope he does so again here very, very soon. But now, courtesy of our good friend Jonathan Williams, WrestlingThePopCulture.com, and hosts the show Georgia Wrestling Now every Monday night with Jerry Only here on the network. He's been doing some interviews here leading into WrestleMania weekend, and last week, we had a chance to hear him talk to Daniel Bryan, and this week, talking to Ring of Honor's Eddie Edwards. So we're going to go to that right now.
Obviously, you recently you've been embroiled in a feud with your former American Wolves partner, Davey Richards, and his protege, Kyle O'Reilly. How do you think that feud is going to play into the shows in Fort Lauderdale during WrestleMania weekend?
I think it's going to be pretty prevalent just because night one, it's a, you know, a triple threat with me, Roger Strong, and Davey. And Davey's the champ, and, you know, his back's against the wall. He has the target on his back. You know, there's no, you know, pure hatred towards one another, but he's a champ, and it's just a matter of trying to take that belt back.
Right. is that the first night, that match?
Yeah.
And do you know what your match will be the second night, or just kind of depends on
who? Yeah, it's me versus Kevin Steen.
Oh, okay.
And if I win the title, I'll be defending it. And same with if Roderick wins, he'll defend it the next day, and maybe if he wins it, he'll defend it the next day too.
Right. Okay. Well, do you know who Kyle O'Reilly's facing during these shows, or are you?
Kyle's facing Adam Cole. I believe that's night two, I believe, and night one, I think he's facing Jay Lethal.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the...
So, did things kind of get resolved or whatever between the two of you at the last iPay-per-view, or do you think...
Between me and Davey, or...
You and Kyle.
Me and Kyle. No, you know, Kyle, he doesn't have the same respect that, you know, guys in Ring of Honor should have. He doesn't have it the same as Davey has. And, you know, at the end of the match in New York, the last iPay-per-view, he said, you know, he didn't respect me, he didn't respect Adam Cole. You know, that's fine, he can go about his business, but, you know, he shouldn't be doing that. You know, after a match out in the open like that, if he's got problems, that's fine, he'll set it in the ring, you know, from bell to bell, but when it's over, that should be it, you know?
Right. Well, I know you guys, obviously you do a lot of shows every year, but these shows that kind of follow WrestleMania around every year are some of the bigger shows you do for obvious reasons. How would you say the shows that happen during WrestleMania week compare to the shows you guys normally put on as far as the crowd and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, they're a bit different just because, you know, WrestleMania obviously draws a huge crowd. You know, people from all over the world who travel to see it. And so we get, you know, we get fans that wouldn't even be in the country, you know, if it wasn't for WrestleMania. So it's new fans who maybe haven't seen it before and they're not aware of what Ring of Honor is. They're in the area and they figure, hey, it's another wrestling show. And they come and they check it out. So we get to introduce the product to a new fan base. And hopefully from there, we, you know, we get a hook and they can continue to be fans.
Right. Well, obviously, a lot of guys from Ring of Honor have had success in WWE as of late with people like Tyler Black and Claudio Castagnoli and Chris Hero, all the way up to, you know, the two champions right now, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. How do you feel the Ring of Honor guys fare once they get to WWE? And is that a goal of yours, or would you rather stay loyal to Ring of Honor?
I mean, well, right now, you know, CM Punk and Bryan, you know, they're a prime example of what can happen. You know, it proves how good of a product, you know, Ring of Honor is, and it's a great place for guys to be and for guys to learn their craft and everything. And, you know, they chose to move on, which is fine. You know, the same with, you know, Tyler and Claudio and Chris. You know, at different times, the guys are going to decide if they want to move on to a different place and see what's happening there. But as for myself, you know, I'm really happy with Ring of Honor right now. And, you know, that's the only thing I have in my sight is helping, you know, continue with Ring of Honor and see, you know, what we can make if we can get this bigger than it is now, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've got with Sinclair Broadcasting, I guess you kind of have moved in a step up in that regard. How do you think things have changed, if they have changed, in Ring of Honor since that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. You know, we have TV all over the place now, which is, you know, we're seeing the effect of it. You know, we're doing meet and greets and stuff. You know, obviously, there's a meet and greet in an area near me that has television. People come out and they're familiar with the product. They see it on TV. Even if they haven't been to live events, but they get the coverage show and they're watching and they're trying to keep up with it. So I think slowly but surely, you know, we're introducing it to new people and we're getting a new fan base. And hopefully that just continues, you know?
Right. Well, not long ago, Ring of Honor released a DVD of some of your accomplishments and better matches with the promotion, but like a lot of the DVDs they release like that as of late, it doesn't include some of the more recent stuff. First of all, what did you think of that collection? And second of all, do you know if there are plans to release a second volume or anything like that to kind of catch people up on the last couple of years?
Hey, I was honored actually to get a, you know, DVD or whatever, 3-disc set, you know, for myself. It's an accomplishment for myself. And I like the way it turned out. You know, it told the story of, you know, getting to the Triple Crown, you know, winning the television title, the tag title, and the world title. So
right.
I thought it did a good job telling the story, you know, showing what I've accomplished. I'm sure at some point, you know, another disc or hopefully, you know, a couple more discs or whatever will come out in the future, but I haven't been told anytime soon or anything like that. I don't know if anything's in the works or not.
Okay, cool. All right, man. Well, that's all I had for you for now. But I do plan on being down in Miami that week, so I'm definitely going to try to make it to the Ring of Honor shows. I was at one of the ones in Atlanta last year, and it was a good show. Cool. Well, I appreciate your time, and look forward to seeing you down there.
Yeah, thanks, man. Please stay out when you're down there.
All right, cool. I will.
Man, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Vince Gill for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Real life's not a song. In less than it takes to play my latest hit, someone will be killed or injured in an alcohol-related crash. So next time you're out with someone who's been drinking, don't let them take the wheel. Take the keys instead. Sad stories make great songs, but happy endings make better lives. That's why friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof,
be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
How can we help our kids prepare for the future? Hey, I'm Shelley Wright. I don't have to tell you that children face pretty tough challenges these days. It can be hard to keep them involved in their schoolwork. We adults need to make sure our kids find something in school that really sparks their interest, like music. Not only is music in school fun, but studies show that kids who learn music find science and math concepts a little easier to grasp, and that they show significant increases in self-esteem and thinking skills. And music and creativity go together, too. Your school music teacher can tell you all about it. So help prepare your children for life. Encourage them to learn to love music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
You got me in a corner. You got me in a corner.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi here with you. And, well, I do want to apologize for anybody out there listening into to Gabe himself, because I know he was crunched on time there, but we had a wicked little delay for some reason on the phone lines there. So, Les, I'm sorry if you felt as though I was stomping over you there. Just hopefully it's all worked out now.
Well, I wondered, you know, when I'd ask questions, it was like, but I've heard that delay on, you know, satellite interviews on television. I didn't realize we'd stepped up to that level at this point, but yeah. You know, now I'm gonna tell you, I didn't listen to the whole interview, but Eddie's end of that interview sounded scratchy to me. Now I don't know how it sounds on, you know, if you're listening to this on computer, I don't have a clue. But and then somebody disconnected me. I'd set the phone down. The young man that works on my computer is here trying to straighten out my email stuff, and I went in to see how he was doing that, came back and picked up the phone and says, if you'd like to make a call, hang up and try again. I thought I didn't hang up the first time.
Well, that's the one wicked issue in this day and age when it comes to voice over IP and cable companies doing the phone lines and, you know, how people record and everything else. It can be one big gigantic pain. So sorry for anybody out there, because I heard the same thing with Eddie's interview as well. But hopefully we're back on track here in a little bit. See, listen, you know, not to slow it down here a little bit, but two passings that took place with gentlemen I'd like to talk about with you. First one being Burt Randolph Sugar, the longtime boxing writer, publisher, when he did Boxing Illustrated to compete with The Ring magazine, where he worked for, I believe, a long time. And, you know, he was always a guy who would pop around like a Muppet when it came to, you know, talking about boxing or going as a go-to guy with it. But, you know, they did it with professional wrestling, and he as well. But do you have any experiences with Burt Sugar, any thoughts about him from just his time as a journalist over the years?
Well, you know, obviously my first heard the name was in the through the magazines by reading, you know, Ring, because the old Ring magazine had a back set. Wrestling was a secondary thing for the original Ring magazine. Boxing was the lead, and then there was wrestling in like the back third of the magazine. And so he was, you know, he was the guru there. But I don't know, you know, I realize I'm no boxing expert, but I think, you know, apparently he was very well schooled, you know, in that thing. But I've heard a couple interviews with him about wrestling, and I'm not so sure that I, you know,
that
would say the same thing there.
That was a surprise to me too, because I remember the book with him and Albano coming out, the wrestling, you know, guide for dummies or whatever. So up that for dummies line of books that was out for so long, and I never saw that, and I never saw him as a go to guy for media to go to. I guess I just had missed it, or I wasn't in that area where it was on. So it's surprising with Dave Meltzer, you know, kind of talking about how it wasn't that Burt Sugar was a bad guy at all or anything like that. He's very gentlemanly and, you know, saying, hey, if, you know, this guy's the expert in talking about things. But when they would take him for sound bites, it was apparently his, I don't know, his knowledge of wrestling kind of ended around the time Bruno won the title, which that's a long time ago, if you were the go-to guy throughout the 80s, or at least was one of them for people.
Yeah, well, you know, he had a great gimmick, the hat and the cigar.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You know, but you know, that's, of course, most of the people that listen to this show aren't old enough to, but, you know, if you look back to the Walter Winchell, who was a great, you know, if you saw the pictures of Winchell, Bert, you know, looked a little bit like him, you know, in that regard, with the fedora and the whole thing. So, and maybe that's what, you know, Sugar played off of too. You know, I mean, maybe he thought, well, this is a good idea. I'll look like Walter Winchell, and you know, but yeah, I didn't know a lot about him, except I was surprised, honestly, that he was as young as he was, because I think he was doing Ring magazine before, gosh, I'm trying to think, it was before, right at when I broke in the business, I think. So that's been almost 52 years ago. And, you know, when you're a young guy and you see somebody in that kind of position, you just figure they're quite a bit older than you are, which, you know, I was surprised at how young he really was.
Well, and the damnedest thing is he always looked, let's just say 60 years old is what you would think, an old grizzled, and that's how he always looked too. So I was actually surprised he was that young as well, because he always looked the same for so long. And again, with the hat and the cigar and the smile and the way he spun yarns, and he made a great observation, I think, in that, you know, at 74, you know, and obviously being the boxing fan that he was when he was born, it's not like television was that prevalent. As he moved into his older years, radio, that's how you listen to the big fights, and that's how you got your information, and you heard stories. And he always got me when he was doing boxing and talking about boxing and forums and things like that, where they would ask him questions. He came across as a guy probably that came from radio, and how he presented himself, and, you know, the way he spoke. That's, you know, that really just kind of made me think, but thank you, Les.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
I wonder about that with him, but another one is, you talk about breaking into the business. Obviously, the passing of Joe Blanchard, who probably a lot of people, actually people listening to this show probably obviously know more about him, but for the most part, younger fans would only know him maybe as the figurehead commissioner of the AWA, but most certainly as Tully Blanchard's father. But he was a guy that played in the CFL. Back in the Big 7 days, before Oklahoma State joined the Big 8, played football and wrestled and made connections that way, was trained by Stu Hart. And actually, I'm not saying that, you know, he knew his place early on, but taking a role in the office and becoming an announcer in Indianapolis through his connections with Wilbur Snyder, you know, he was, even though he'll go down as a wrestler, he's probably more known for...
He was before Snyder. I mean, when I say before, he and Wilbur and Kaninsky played football together, but he worked for Barnett because was a TV commentator. He wrestled and did the TV here, actually was doing it before I broke in the business. But then when I went to work for Barnett, I first got booked with Barnett in early 62, Joe was doing the TV then, but it was helping out in the office, and he was very helpful to me. Joe and I became friends, and I worked. He helped run some of the towns, so you know he'd talk about finishes and this and that and the other thing, and with me, and was really helpful to a young guy. In fact, the first time I ever laid eyes on Tully Blanchard, was Joe had been to one of Tully's early Saturday morning Pee Wee football games and had brought him in uniform to Indianapolis television, which was done on Saturday morning. So that's, I guess Tully was probably 10 or 12, I mean, not 10, 12, maybe 12, 13 years old at the time when I first laid eyes on him, but never had the opportunity to wrestle Joe, but was around him. Well, I was very glad. 2 years ago, he was at the NWA Fan Fest in Charlotte, and I had the opportunity to sit down and chat with him for a while. In fact, I think on my Facebook page, there's a picture. I think it was Joe and Joe and maybe Terry Funk and myself and a couple other guys. I don't remember right off the top of my head, but yeah, Joe was a good guy, a good sound worker. He was used mid-card and up on top some, at least in other places I can't say, but around here, you know, at that time. But I guess he was probably the first guy that I ever saw that wrestled and did television in both, you know, and which I ended up doing a number of years later myself. So, but yeah, and you know, and I was thinking too, Tully just, you know, buried his father, and now he's going to end up, he's in Miami and going to have to, you know, shift gears and do the whole Hall of Fame induction and try to be upbeat from that. But I'm sure, you know, Joe's proud of him and should be. Tully was a hell of a worker.
That's what I really wanted to ask you about with him, because it seemed as if,
I don't know how long he wrestled for, but it just seemed to be that he, you know, as an ex-football player and everything that goes along with that sort of stuff, and I'm not, you know, I know some of the names of the talent that was there, but in hindsight, did everyone just kind of know, and did he kind of know that, you know what, my mind and my mouth is better than my wrestling, and this is the direction he's going to go, or was it just one of those things where he said, you know, okay, hey, you do both? Because, yeah, I guess it was really a revolutionary thing that he did at the time, being a worker along with an announcer.
Well, you know, now there was another guy up in Detroit, up in Windsor, Layton, Lord Athol Layton, you know, the English wrestler, did Doyle's TV up there. And, I don't, you know, gosh, Joe was articulate, and I don't really know how they, you know, how he morphed into the television announcing thing. With me, it was just Rudy Kay needed somebody and said, you said you'd like to try this. By God, here it is. And thank God I was able to do it, or I could have crashed and burned the first time I ever got a microphone in my hand. But with Joe, I'm not sure how he got into that. Whether he just now he wasn't he was doing it wasn't doing it full time. I can't think of the other commentator that did in Indianapolis. Some too. Damn it, it slips my mind right now. But anyway. So I'm not sure how, but Joe was very articulate, and I think that's, you know, that's part of it, too. And, of course, you know, a wrestler doing commentary back then was more unique in ways that he approached it as a wrestler, I think, more, too, as I recall, rather than just being the local weather guy who got an extra $25 or $50 to fill, you know, to go out there and do that. Because back in the early 60s, with the exception of Soli, who I never laid eyes on until 67, when I went into Tampa, I don't recall any particular television announcers that I thought were tremendous. Well, Menneker, I guess, maybe was the first guy, but Menneker didn't wrestle when he was doing television. But Sam.
Well, yeah, I was wondering about that because I remember him. I've seen YouTube clips of him, you know, being in grudge things, but it seemed to be the stuff I'm seeing at his age, it was something where he was kind of like forced back into duty.
Yeah, Sam. Wasn't Sam one of Mae West's guys in her show? I don't. There were several of the boys, several of the guys that wrestled were. Mae West had a stage show, Vegas act with using, bodybuilders, wrestlers. I'm not sure if Sam was part of that or not. Where I first saw, you know, I knew who Sam Menneker was. It was in 62 when I went to Calgary. Sam was doing Stu's TV, and that's where I first met Sam or first heard Sam work. But, so, I mean, it wasn't, you know, wrestlers doing it isn't, you know, it went back a while, but it wasn't common. And Sam was exaggerated. It was like a big body slam or a big hip lock or a big, you know, thing or other. Joe was more grounded, I guess you'd say, as I recall, and more articulate in terms of, you know, conveying what's going on in terms of, you know, the technical end of it to a certain degree, where Sam was more a carny, you know, a pitch man, which most of the announcers, with the exception of Soli back then, were. You know,
well,
he was. Go ahead.
No, it's thinking of it too with watching, you know, what I've seen of Southwest Championship Wrestling too, where I've had a chance to see, obviously, the era a lot of people know, like the 83 stuff, but then I've also seen, I guess, when he first went into that hemisphere, the old, wherever it was, the Junction grocery store or whatever it was, I guess it was around the time the Von Erichs were starting, because they were in the first match. It was like 78, 79, where he had a slow, articulate, clear, concise, you know, sports kind of, yeah, more, I guess, really like Soli too, where it was sports-like, not, you know, the show hype sort of thing, or what you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of the guys, a lot of the commentators back then were you tolerated them. You didn't, because a lot of them were more intent upon getting themselves over than they were, you know, the wrestlers, you know, because, like I say, they might be the local weatherman or this, that, or the other thing. I was, well, like when I went in into Jim Hess, who did Knoxville when I was just wrestling there for John Kazana, had a morning talk show on the ABC affiliate, because I had done that show with him a couple times early morning. He wasn't a wrestling guy. Nice guy. I socialized with him some, but he didn't know a lot about wrestling holds. If he didn't understand, he called it a warp your head off hold. Right, that's a warp. He's got a warp your head off hold. Okay, thanks. Okay, very good, Jim. And Big Bill Ward in Charlotte at Channel 3. Again, a nice guy, but he was more a TV, a TV host type of guy. And in the middle of, one of the things that when I first started doing working televisions for Crockett was I was more like a sheep herder to a certain, like, you know, I knew what the something was going to happen. I knew, you know, of course, it was laid out to me. It wasn't laid out to Bill or to Bob Cottle in Raleigh either. But the problem with Bill sometimes, he'd be wishing, Fanny Jones a happy 98th birthday in the middle of a hot angle, you know, in the ring. So part of my job when I sat in with Bill was to talk over him, you know, and say, wow, this is going on, or that's going to be sure that, you know, that what was happening in the ring was more important than, you know, Hattie Mae's 98th birthday.
You know, you said that about Mike Hogwood last week, and, you know, I love Mike Hogwood, and in fact, you get a response in the F4W forum too. With it, there could not have been anything more true or dead on said about Mike Hogwood, who was a lovely human being, but was exactly what you said. Yes, he would be wishing her a happy 91st birthday in the middle of like a Eddie Edwards Roderick Strong match.
Yeah,
but you know, I got, because I know we're getting close to a break here, but before we talk some other old school stuff here coming up after the break, but. I know you were incredibly busy in this time, but with the boom of cable going on, obviously that Southwest Championship Wrestling show was different in that it was a lot different and not what a lot of people were used to in many places. And people are always going to remember the Bob Sweetan, Tully Blanchard, and I'm sorry, I think it was Tully Blanchard and Bobby Jaggers, the infamous pig shit incident, as it's been called, where a bucket was dumped over Blanchard's head. I can't remember exactly what it was with Bobby Jaggers, but I know it involved him. And as far as being in the wrestling business in that time, and obviously TBS, you know, really being the first one to crack, when it came to the Southwest show, did anyone where you were or you yourself say anything about it, think anything about it, or is it just,
I never saw that, Mike. I never got a chance to see that. I'm not sure. Even when I, what year, do you remember what year that was, honestly?
That would have been 82, I think. They started because they had the sheep herders. Ricky Morton was there with Lucas, the grapplers. They were in far better shape, and then they went into 83, and then maybe possibly in the beginning of 84, but that's when Vince got it for All American.
Okay, all right. For me, cable was more about HBO was fascinating to me more than but I remember, a lot of people, Terry Funk obviously foresaw what cable was going to do to the wrestling business way before anybody else, and I've said this before, I think, on this show. Terry was a visionary. I mean, not only a very creative worker and a great worker and a great promo, but a visionary for the business. I think he foresaw it way ahead of a lot of people. But I remember Nick Goulas' show was on I, for the life of me, I couldn't even begin to tell you what cable channel back in the 70s, you know, in the mid-70s it was. But I remember saying, watching it a few times, and was horrified by the, you know, by the production values and the way it was, you know, the show was put together. And this was after we had started creating a lot of new things in wrestling television at WBIR and Knoxville, Channel 10, you know, split screen, instant replay, the personality profile. And anyway, I remember saying to Ron, Christ, our show is Head and Shoulders better than this one. You should contact this network. And again, like I say, Mike, I don't remember what it was. It may have been an early version of USA. I'm not sure. You know, and see about getting our show on there. And Ron's narrow vision at that time was why. All the places it goes, we don't go.
Yeah.
You know, so he never saw it as any value because we were on the Kingsport station and the Hazard station, and then Knoxville BIR covered a huge amount of area, and that's all we needed because that was our territory. He never saw past that, you know, that maybe this will expand our territory, even if you thought it expanded it 20, you know, 50 or 100 miles in either direction, that would be of any value to him. So I don't think a lot of people saw, you know, saw what it was going to do or how or understood how to use it. And I won't say that I was a visionary in that respect either. I just saw this show is on in our market, and our show is 10 times better. We've got better talent, and you know, the production values are better. And I would rather see our show played again at a different time, a different day, at a different hour, and repeated than to see this crap on in our territory. So, but he didn't see any value in it at all. And of course, you know, back then too, everything was bicycling around on the big 2-inch tapes, and those things were now realize this is the '70s, and those suckers cost about $100 a pop, which back in 1970 was a lot of money. You know, when it's or in the mid-70s when gasoline was 50 cents a gallon. $100 for a tape, and those tapes were used over. I mean, you know, you'd dub over the top of show after show until the tapes just wore out, and then you'd have to replace them. So, you know, there are a lot of factors that just he didn't see the value.
And what was becoming out of basically it was a nationwide territory, and when you first broke in, network TV still had its, you know, grips in wrestling, and it was still distributed that way, and then it went into, you know, I think the modern, more quote-unquote, the modern era of the territory day where things were huge in your territory and TV ratings were huge and people were drawing big houses every single week. When cable hit, was there anybody from back in that era, or was there anybody that was, who was forward thinking that you knew? Obviously, in TBS, they were, you know, in some ways, and obviously Ole took it as far as the northern tours and things like that. But do you remember anybody back from, you know, at the time you broke in that looked at this as a new thing besides Barnett?
Well, you know, Florida Championship Wrestling from Florida, Eddie Graham, they were syndicated outside of their territory. In fact, well, of course, I had worked Charlotte before I ever went to Florida. And then I came back. But when Danny Miller and I left Tampa to go to Charlotte as a team in 71, there were places that we were already known and were over because of the Florida Championship Wrestling from Florida being overlapping into the Charlotte territory. But I don't, you know, to my knowledge, there was never a problem with that from Crockett, or maybe because they were both Alliance members. Maybe it was because, you know, Jim was comfortable with the fact that Eddie wasn't going to promote, you know, whatever town in North Carolina out of Tampa, Florida, which would have been, you know, back then a ridiculous move anyway, you know. And because of their working agreement, you know, with the NWA, it wasn't going to happen probably anyway. But that was, I think Championship Wrestling in Florida probably was the first show that I'm aware of that was syndicated over a large market. Now, when I was in the Crockett office in the 70s, when we put together a promotional package for the promoters to take for spot shows and everything, part of that package was to show ratings on our TVs in different markets. And I think at that point, and I could be wrong about this, we were like in 35 different markets, and we had to supply the tape to each one of these markets because, you know, it wasn't cable. We were as far north as Charleston and Huntington, West Virginia, and which would have been a 300-plus mile trip out of Charlotte, I guess. But one of the amazing things that I do remember from that, it's probably buried in all the memorabilia crap that I've got stored all over the place here, but I think I kept one of those promotional packages. But we had a listing of the ratings of the TV. Asheville, North Carolina was on Saturday night. In a three-station market, wrestling, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling carried 85% of the market. 85%.
People talk about just Memphis when it comes to that kind of number. That's ridiculous. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not sure of our Knoxville show in terms of actual numbers, but I know one yardstick that I always used to measure by, and I was we were all so excited. The ABC affiliate I just mentioned, that's when Fuller bought the territory, we were on Channel 26, the ABC affiliate. But it was a U station, and back then the U stations didn't have the reach or the power, you know. Anything over a certain number, you know, like if you station, you know, Channel 26, I mean, most of your, you know, it was Channel 6, Channel 10, with
yeah,
the other two Knoxville.
That's something that didn't boom until the 80s for a lot of people, the UHF boom, where people got more wrestling. But, yeah, you're
yeah.
exactly right. That was not a big deal to be on those stations. Was in
right.
a lot of ways
so,
terrible.
So one of the first things Ron did is went shopping, and Channel 10 was, you know, picked us up, and we moved there. And he bought the territory, and we opened under the Southeastern banner in November of 74. And in 75, we moved over to Channel 10, to WBR, the CBS affiliate. So anyway, long story short, I don't know, it was a year or 2 years later, whatever it was, we were on our show aired 2 to 3 on Saturday afternoons. And anyway, the Channel 26, University of Tennessee played football against Notre Dame for the first time in I don't know how many, but it wasn't like they played every year, or they hadn't played in a long time. Maybe it was the first time in 20 years or something. I don't remember exactly. But it was a big deal, obviously, in Knoxville because that's the home of University of Tennessee. And, brother, when they play, I mean, it's like if you have a home game, you don't even want to get within 10 miles of that campus because it's all orange, brother. You know, it's all about UT. But anyway, Knoxville, University of Tennessee played at South Bend against Notre Dame. And Channel 26 broadcast the game live. It wasn't, for whatever reason, that game was not covered on the network that year. I can't even imagine why, but it wasn't. So anyway, Channel 26 broadcast it in Knoxville. And during our hour from 2 to 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, the best that game could do was tie us in the ratings. And to us, that was a hell of a victory because you basically had bearded the lion in his own den, you know. I mean, never mind beat a UT football game on Saturday afternoon in terms of what you draw in fandom, but the fact that we just tied them against Notre Dame, of all teams, was amazing to us.
When Notre Dame more than still mattered, you know, people see 100,000 people in Tennessee.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, and at the time, Johnny Majors, who had been an All-American, you know, was the head coach at UT as well. I mean, so you know, the coach was his story. You can compare him coaching there, similar to like Calipari at at UK now in the Final Four in the basketball thing. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. So, wrestling was strong, and cable, of course, muddled the waters to a certain degree. And you know, the thing, too, is before cable, you and I could work an injury angle and you could leave our territory and go to another territory and wrestle and continue to wrestle. And as far as the people in our territory knew on television, you had broken your leg or your nose or whatever the hell it was, right? And then we'd bring you back, you know, in 8 weeks or 10 weeks and pick up the angle and draw money with it. You know, but of course, once cable came into play and once the networks, you know, started to expand, that wasn't possible any longer because the territory you sent this guy to may possibly, be playing in your area anyway. So you couldn't pretend that the guy had broken his leg because he obviously hadn't.
You know, you talked about the bicycle earlier on, and, you know, for those people who might think that was that antiquated, living in between Baltimore and Washington, for some reason, and I didn't realize this until it actually happened, when it came to syndicated TV, we were on a two-week delay from what was actually taking place on TBS. So unless you saw the TBS, so you had no idea what was going on, and that was, well, God, it must have been 85, 86, at least, whenever it was. But one thing I also remember in that boom of UHF and being able to see so many shows from so many different places is you got to the wrong tapes occasionally and weird things and things like that. Did you ever remember anything with sending tapes out when it came to the wrong tape getting sent or the wrong thing being shown or anything like that? Did that ever happen to you or cause any problems?
I'm sure it did. I don't recall right off the top of my head where it was disastrous in any particular way. But, yeah, sure. That was a possibility. Or that it just didn't get shipped on, you know, that somebody – and like, for example, our tape would go out of Knoxville to Kingsport, Kingsport to Hazard, and then back in, well, the guy, you know, whoever was in charge of the tape department in Kingsport may have forgotten to put it on the truck or whatever, and then Hazard's calling and wanting to know where their tape is. So you might have to put somebody in a car. I mean, thank God we were logistically close enough to do that, you know. You might have to put a tape in a car, you know, run a dub and put a tape in a car. And because we were starting to use cassettes in-house to tape things and to save some things. That was the big old cassettes. But everything went out on the 2-inch reel and the masters. Now, at that time, TBS would not Turner was so obsessed with quality, the first cassettes weren't of great quality. So I remember us sending some – I remember Dick Slater and I, for example. I had won the first ever two-ring battle royal in Atlanta. That was in 73. And so anyway, Dick was going down there because Slater had been a big star in Atlanta, and he was our champion in Knox in Southeastern. And the deal was we were going to send an interview down. I was going to host it, and, you know, we were going to talk about – the battle royal two ring and he was going to be in and that sort of thing. And we had to send it on 2-inch tape because Turner would not accept. He would not allow his engineers to play cassettes on the air. But now, as far as cable being able to draw, you mentioned, the superstation. When I was the road agent, promoter or whatever you want to call it, I ran the tours for Georgia / WCW up here, Ohio, Michigan, and West Virginia in 82 and 83. Man, I mean, you talk about did it have an effect? We drew money in towns where you wouldn't have expected to draw, honestly. It was amazing. We went in some small when I first took the tours, Jerry Briscoe had been running them, and he came with me on the first run, right, obviously, to kind of show me the ropes and what was going on. And then there was a couple little towns in West Virginia that, I obviously went in ahead of the boys most of the time to get with the people in the box office and be sure everything was set up. I'd get to this town, I'd look around, and I thought, this is a rib. They've sent me here as a rib. You know, no, we can't draw it, but they come out of the hills. I mean, we were filling buildings you just, you know, you couldn't believe. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. It's funny now. It wasn't funny when it first happened. We were contacted by the head football coach in Lima, Ohio, Al Snow's hometown, by the way, and to run a show. So I stopped there out on one of the tours and sat down and talked with him, and we came up with some ideas, you know, and of course he was going to have his ball players sell tickets, and they were going to advertise it, and this, that, and the other thing, and the ball player that sold the most tickets would get an autograph. We'd have a football and have all the boys on the card autograph the football and present it to him in the ring and that sort of thing. You know, a thing in a ways to, you know, to really hype it up. So I had a book that TBS supplied us that showed, you know, the markets they were in the three states that I covered. And so if it was a town that I'd never been in before, I mean, we had our regular towns up here, Cincinnati, Canton, Huntington, Charleston, you know, Saginaw, and so forth and so on. But, you know, other towns we ran, you know, occasionally as well. So anyway, nobody had ever been to Lima, and I'm looking at the book, and the book shows we've got great saturation. And so, okay, I set a deal up, and we book a date, and, you know, I go back home. I was living in Knoxville at the time, and when I wasn't on the road, I worked on the phone there, you know, and would call in a ticket order to the ticket manufacturer, and, you know, and we had a standardized floor plan for these places so that, you know, we could set it all up. And so anyway, and I ordered posters. So I get a call from Mr. Barnett. Lastly, I see you have Lima, Ohio on the schedule for such and such a tour. Yeah, Jim, I do. Lastly, do you realize that in the Wall Street Journal, Lima, Ohio, and Lansing, Michigan are the two most financially depressed cities in the United States of America? No, Jim, I don't, because first of all, I don't read the Wall Street Journal. And second of all, I'm just going off of the book that TBS supplies us, that we have great coverage there. And I'm thinking, oh, Christ, Les, you've dug a hole for yourself here. And so I said, well, Jim, you know, if you feel strongly about it, I can cancel the town. No, Leslie, you've already ordered the tickets and the posters. We'll just cross our fingers. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, boy. Anyway, long story short, in the one of the two most financially depressed cities in the United States at that point, we turned away about 400 plus people that couldn't fit into that gym.
What was his response after that?
Well, it was nothing. That was the way we drew there, and this was all off of cable, obviously. But I think part of that too, realize, is we weren't there all the time, right? That was the basically the forerunner of, I guess, the way Vince runs today, right? I mean, you weren't in the same towns all the time. But, Columbus, Canton, Cincinnati. And we, like I say, we ran spots as well. Huntington, Charleston were regulars on the tour. Like it's Canton, here, Columbus, and so forth and so on. Saginaw, Lansing, and on and on and on. But that was all off the cable. All off the cable.
You're going to make fun of me for this as well. You should. Everyone should make fun of me for this. But I learned my own version of shorthand, believe it or not, by when the scroll would run, because we didn't have cable. I'd have to go over to somebody else's house. And again, being so enthralled with wrestling, that I learned a version of shorthand by when Freddie Miller or Tony Schiavone or whoever it was at the time was reading with the towns you would be going in and the tours. I would actually write that down and go Canton, Ohio, Lansing. And then it became even worse later on when I would be writing it down on TBS after Crockett had bought them, and they were running two separate tours, which, being a kid, I didn't know then. I could never figure out how this was matched up, how you could run the Omni one night, and then, you know, who's going to be wrestling in Charleston the exact same night. It always blew my mind, but that's nobody needed to even know that. It just
figured I'd go ahead and say that.
You know, of working the Atlanta office, working the Charlotte office, the one city I've never been in is Baltimore.
Really?
No, never. I know Gary Juster from Atlanta, you know, from the office there. I've never been in Baltimore. Never, as far as I know in my life, I've never even been near the city, never mind in it. Nope, never been there.
I was going to say, even like Capital sports-wise, I mean, I know they had D.C. and everything, but anywhere around D.C. or was just in Virginia as close as you got?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. I'll be damned. Well, I'll tell you, speaking of Virginia, too, there is one thing, good thing coming up here. I know it's WrestleMania weekend, and talk about some of the ills of what's going on, but I do.
Virginia, let me throw something at you here real quick, and then you can jump on this. I didn't know that Eddie was going to be on recorded tonight. I didn't know, you know, I thought he was going to be on live. I was going to pick at him a little bit because someone had told me, and they didn't name any names, so I don't know who came up with this. But, you know, Ring of Honor was in Norfolk a while back. And a friend of mine had told me, talked to a couple of the guys on the card. Again, he wouldn't tell me who said it, but they said, can you believe what happened in Norfolk? And he said, what? They said, we wrestled in the basement of the Scope. And I said, and they were upset by that. He said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, the next time you talk to those guys, say, well, you know, guys like Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, Blackjack Mulligan, superstar Billy Graham, the Andersons, wrestled in that basement every friggin' week and didn't seem to bother them. It's a shame you guys are such big megastars that it's beneath you. But that's where we wrestled. It's called the, it's not the basement. It's called the Scope Annex, and that's where we ran weekly in Norfolk, except for big shows, and we moved upstairs.
Well,
so that upset a couple of the megastars in Ring of Honor, by the way.
Believe it or not, that's actually last year. You can like driving south. It's nice drive. It's old. It's country. You don't have to worry about anything. It's nice to get away from people. Believe it or not, at the beach. Believe it or not. So the head south is really nice. And you know, he's going to Chicopee and now Wallops Island. Go maybe a little bit further south. But I'm actually going this week. Hopefully, if the weather is nice, and you know, just take the family driving down to Norfolk. Either Saturday night or Sunday. I love coming back, riding that road, because for some reason, it just reminds me of just professional wrestling. I don't know how to explain it. It's just like Saturday 6:05 syndrome. It's just, I don't know what it is about the area that reminds me of that, and that's actually my plan for this weekend, is to hopefully, if the weather's nice enough, take that long Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, which is $12 each way, by the way. Sick,
really
expensive, but yeah. But I guess to try to keep up that length of road, you know, that's what it's come to now. But I'm actually planning on going down to Norfolk and actually seeing the Scope and then just kind of heading back up on the drive and thinking about wrestling leading into Sunday night. I'd probably have problems.
Yeah.
But do also mention tomorrow night, Peach State Pandemonium, Ronnie Garvin. Couldn't be with them a couple weeks back, but he is going to be with them tomorrow night. So that's going to be at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. And I do want to mention, obviously, for any of your news information needs out there, ringsiderap.com, georgiawrestlinghistory.com, where you can go through to order the Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate shows coming up this weekend. And hopefully, if we're lucky, and hopefully if I'm good and don't screw this up somehow, Jim Ross, hopefully, will be with us next week to maybe talk a little bit about Mania. So hopefully that all goes well. And Les, what do you got coming up?
Well, Vegas in a couple weeks for CAC. I went out there to meet with a young gentleman by the name of David Jackson, who's, he's actually bringing me out. But something else has come up, a friend of mine has bought the rights to GLOW.
Get out.
Yeah, really. But it's going to be a variety entertainment show. But he called me the other day and was talking to me about it. They obviously have a TV deal in place. I think they're going to start taping in August. But he wants the in-ring performances to be upgraded dramatically from what the original Glow was. And I don't know. He's going to be in Vegas too, and I think David and I. He's running a Glow show with a reunion of a lot of the old Glow girls about 5 minutes from the Gold Coast on Monday night, the 16th of April. So I think we're going to go over there, and I don't know. I may work, may have something to do with that in some capacity at some point. But then of course I'm going to be in Charlotte in August for the NWA. Legends Fan Fest, and Greg Price hasn't made any announcements yet, but he's adding a couple things this year that'll be a first time ever for those fan fests, which I think will interest quite a few people. And other than that, I'm open for bookings. You can reach me Les@epwt.com, and love working around the country with young talent and running training camps.
Nobody wants me, but I force myself down everybody's throats anyway. I've got my own personal John Cena when it comes to wrestling audio, and also audio about mixed martial arts and boxing and other random things as well. But the other like big audio nightmare coming up, WrestlingObserver.com. I'm going to have another one here real soon. The Emperor himself, Brian Alvarez, and I will actually be back. I'm not sure if live is going to be the case, but maybe just a little bit on delay with Brian live on location in Miami, Florida for WrestleMania coming up this Sunday at 6 o'clock. So there it is, everyone. And again, Ringside Wrap. Go ahead, Les.
Well, you mentioned Brian, and I was just thinking we've been kicking a couple emails back and forth. If we can work it out, we'll probably do a show from Vegas because he's going to be out there. Well, Dave's coming in on Wednesday, but Brian's going to be in for the whole shooting match. So we had talked that we may try to squeeze a show in while we're out there too.
Oh, that's awesome. And hopefully next year I can actually pull off going to this because Brian's making an annual tradition now, and it's always something I've had a lot of interest in. And I'm glad, Les, you're going back to it now for the first time, and it feels like I need to go. I really do. Probably should do that. My duty as a longtime wrestling fan. So, everybody, again, tomorrow night, Ron Garvin on Peach Day Pandemonium. And for Rich Tate hiding somewhere in the shadows, wish you all a good night.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. Production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.